This is The After Party, live with Kim McAllister. Pick a couch, grab a drink, and settle into the conversation.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Friday edition of The After Party Live. Thank you for your patience in being here. Had the Mark Thompson Show wrap up. Looks like he's happy with the Friday show. So, hey, if Mark's happy, we're all happy, right? Oh, sorry. I have that. You can see the overhang that I have showing there. Nope, it's still showing. All right. I don't know why I didn't see that earlier on the Mark Thompson Show. I don't know. But welcome to the After Party Live. Some great things ahead for us. Tim Sika will be here in just a few minutes to talk movies. And I always love to compare the reviews between Michael Snyder and Tim Sika. And if they both match, you know it's really going to be a good one. But just to see how they differently think about things, I always like to compare it. So we'll do that. Before we get into it, though, I really, really wanted to celebrate a friend of the show who is having a 40th wedding anniversary. And it's a message that I couldn't open a couple of days ago. And I wanted to make sure that I gave it its due. Tony has a 40th wedding anniversary, has kicked in $40 to the After Party Live via the PayPal account. And I just want to wish Tony and her significant other a very, very happy 40th wedding anniversary. Quite an accomplishment. Boy, if I make it 40 years, whew, that'll be awesome. So congratulations to you guys. I hope you had a really, really good celebration. And thank you for the contribution. Thank you to everyone who has contributed to the After Party Live. I'm telling you guys, this is what's keeping this show going. I really can't thank you enough. I'll quickly scroll through the list of names that we have. And I just, again, without you guys throwing down some donations and contributions to the After Party Live, it wouldn't be something that I'd be able to pull off. So I just, I'm telling you, I'm just so grateful and my heart swells every time I see another contribution come in. Find the PayPal link in the show description, also on the About tab of the After Party Live, and a huge, huge After Party Aloha to you. Okay, so the meme of the week, we'll get to it in just a few minutes. I have a couple entries this week, but there's some stories that I wanted to get to first. Mainly, I saw this in the Chronicle, and it's one of these stories that, you know, breaking the rules for a celebrity photo op. I mean, is it worth it? I feel like, you know, it isn't. It really isn't, but people do it. And here is this another situation where this time it is a baseball, what is it? Manager? Is it manager now? And he comes in and onto this plane. And I guess, I don't know, they're so happy to see him that they welcome him into the cockpit for this photo op. He's a former Giants coach who is seen in the cockpit. Now the FAA is looking into all of this. He's not with the Giants right now, though. He's with the Colorado Rockies. And so, again, he comes in, he's into the cockpit, and check this out. I mean, if it's just, wow.
Okay, you're away. Flying the plane, Toronto. Nobody here.
Is your first officer?
Another officer
in the back. Or,
you know,
Andy's nervous.
Landing. I'm landing this tonight.
Are you landing it?
I'm gonna land the plane tonight.
Yep.
So relax.
Nope. Okay, we're really relaxed. Yeah. What altitude are we at, Captain?
35,000 feet.
Oh, really?
Oh, great. So I'm gonna start descending here pretty soon. I just press this button.
You just press that button?
Yeah. So,
Oh.
I mean, obviously everyone on the flight deck is okay with it, but the amount of rules broken here, so that he can have this, what, a video op and sit in the pilot seat? Wild. I mean, I can't even imagine the look on the faces of the management, right? This is now the FAA investigating United for breaking multiple policies. The coach is Hensley Bam Bam Mullins, and he puts this video of himself up on Instagram showing himself in the cockpit, in the pilot seat. The flight was from Denver to Toronto, April 10th. He has since deleted this video, but he's pointing over at the first officer, joking about landing the plane. You may have heard about that, heard him say that. I can't even. Why they would think this is okay. I mean, I guess in the old days it would have been fine. Not fine anymore. Don't let the riffraff, I don't care how much of a celebrity it is, into the cockpit anymore. It's just not something we do. Unless you think I'm wrong. I don't know. It seems a little... I don't know. Thinking a lot of yourself that you can... The rules don't apply to you. All right. Let's get to this story about animals. As you see this story about this farmer has discovered, and I don't know how exactly they discovered it, that Axe body spray prevents fighting between the rams on the farm. So they have the pull out the Axe body spray, do a little spritz, everybody's calms right down. I mean, I don't know if it's really good advertising or what, but I wanted to play this for you as well. And then we'll get to Tim Sika with a look at our movies. Hold on, let me get it for you. Here it is.
Africa deodorant spray, often a popular stocking filler for teenage boys, or perhaps it's your chosen deodorant. But have you heard of it being used as a tool in a sheep farmer's toolbox? A UK shepherd swears by the spray to tame her fighting rams. Keisha Brownlee took the theory to a kiwi farm.
Normally popular with teenage boys for its stimulating scent, Lynx Africa apparently has an entirely different effect on rival rams.
It's like an off switch. And you don't put much on, obviously, just spray the flea.
UK shepherdess Sam Bryce claims it's the secret to taming their tempers during breeding season.
I can't take credit for this at all. This was told to me by some of the other ladies, several of us doing it right across the country, and I think even the world now.
See if it works on a ram, eh?
But has it reached New Zealand yet?
It does seem like a bit of a tall tale.
No, fresh is fresh.
The brand has often used animals in its marketing, and it's long been applied to young farmers.
I was a teenager in the 90s when Lynx Africa first came out, and tell you what, in my dorm room at boarding school, that's all you could smell.
But scent in farming is usually used on ewes.
Baby powder, Chanel number 5. But what we use it for is to help mother on orphan lambs.
The boys have their own scent, and that's the problem.
The rams do get pent up with testosterone, and you know, and they fight. It's their natural instinct. So, you know, and often they can make their heads bleed. Occasionally, you know, if it's really bad, you might find one that's been killed. But blood on their heads often attracts flies, and they can get fly struck.
Could this $6 can be the answer to protecting these $15,000 animals?
If I'm honest, I don't think so. You know, the rams are built for testosterone. You know, they're built to fight. It's survival of the fittest.
A little bit like those teenage years. Keisha Brownlee, News Hub.
Pretty funny. Who knew? Who thought Axe body spray could be used in a farm capacity? I don't know. Let's bring in Tim Sika. Hey, Tim.
Hi, Kim.
Hi.
That's a wild story.
Isn't it?
Who knew?
I'm
telling
you. God. We are at the movies with Tim Sika on this Friday, and you've got a lot of good ones to talk about today. I'm kind of excited.
Oh, good. Okay. I guess you want to start with, you know, you're talking about teenage boys. This first movie here, Hard Miles, is four teenage boys figure into the story. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Let's talk about it.
Okay. You know, dystopian dramas and movie treatments based on a true story. I have seen so many of these just in this year alone. It's anyway. Okay. And there's a couple of those we're going to talk about this week. But Hard Miles is the first movie, and it's a sports drama, and it's based on the experiences of this guy. His name was Greg Townsend, not the NFL guy. This Greg Townsend worked with at-risk youths at this facility. It was a correctional facility in Colorado. True story. It was a kind of halfway house for delinquent teenagers. Matthew Modine plays him in the movie, and it's about him, Matthew Modine character, the Greg Townsend character, getting together this group of four disgruntled, you know, cynical, mistrustful teenage inmates for this 762-mile bicycle ride from Denver, Colorado, where the facility is located, to the Grand Canyon to teach them, you know, life lessons along the way. He figures it'll be good for the kids, his job, and the continuation of the facility, whose charter, we're told, has just been revoked. So, you know, there's a little bit of a suspense element there. And that's the premise. And, you know, Kim, this is one of those movies that's really fruitless to criticize. It's the kind of movie easily criticized because it's one of those, you know, quote unquote, inspirational, feel good kinds of movies. And the kind of movie too, that's also prone to relying upon the use of cliches in the telling of its story. These are the kinds of movies and these kind of stories where cliches are born, you know, these inspirational kinds of movies. But I like the film. There seemed to be a concerted effort that when a cliche had to be used, an effort appeared to be made by the filmmakers, not so much to avoid the cliche, but to de-emphasize it by kind of imposing upon said cliche this sense of grit embodied in the directorial choices that were made. And in particular, the performance of Matthew Modine, who's always excellent, but he's especially good here playing this guy dedicated to teaching his kids to, you know, believe in themselves. This is also a story about childhood trauma, coming to terms with that, and living your life not as a victim, but as an empowered survival of that trauma. So there's some intense stuff here, too, about how and why, you know, Greg Townsend came to this profession of working with these at-risk teenagers, and some dark stuff about the kids' past too, which is not always pleasant to watch. And, you know, none of my concerns are probably ever going to be noticed by the movie's intended audience, which I think is young people. I think teenage boys in particular, also girls, because there's a strong female presence in this film, in the person of actor Cynthia McWilliams, who plays a master's in psychology employee of the facility where she teaches alongside the Matthew Modine character, who accompanies this group of four boys and Modine on this arduous cross-country bicycle ride. So yeah, I liked it. It's a good film for kids that doesn't play down to them, and there are some good life lessons to be had in the story too. So that's Hard Miles in a nutshell.
It
opens in theaters exclusively today. Yeah.
Oh, it sounds interesting, but a kind of a little maybe tough to watch.
There's just moments. I'm personally really sensitive to scenes in movies that have any kind of like child, animal, or women abuse.
Right.
So, you know, they may not be as intense for some people as they were for me, but I thought they were pretty intense. But the movie mostly focuses on this bike journey, and there's a lot of humor, and it's a really quality-made movie for young people, and you don't see those very often, these days. So, yeah, it's a goodie. Good one.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Yeah, say that 10 times fast. Yeah, this is another based on a true story, a World War II story, turned into, not surprisingly, a spy action comedy film by director Guy Ritchie, who tends to do this kind of thing in the lion's share of his movies. You know, he tends to, you know, he tends to finesse them and gussy them up in ways I'll talk about. But anyway, The Mystery of Ungentlemanly Warfare, it's based on this book called Churchill's Secret Warriors, the explosive true story of the Special Forces Desperados of World War II. And the movie is a fictionalized version of what the book covers, this plan called Operation Postmaster, right, which was this wartime scenario that Winston Churchill devised that was not sanctioned by the British authorities, by the way, so it was actually illegal. But Churchill did it anyway because he felt it was necessary at that stage of the war to keep Hitler and the Nazis at bay. But it involved this shady group of hired killers, you know, the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare of the title, who were assigned the task, at least in the movie. I mean, how much of this actually happened? We'd have to read the historical record to determine that. But this sketchy group of guys that's in the poster there were assigned this mission of destroying this Nazi ship that contained all the information that was necessary to keep the German fleet of U-boats operational and functioning in an optimal way. So to blow up the ship, of course, would have made a significant dent in the Nazis' submarine warfare. That's what they're tasked to do. They really have no, they're kind of amoral in the way they kind of walk through the world. So they were like perfectly suited to this illegal thing that Churchill was
supposed to be historically accurate, or is this just off the deep end?
It's based on history. I think they did a lot of finessing, but this is the thing. I'm of two minds about this movie for one of the things you just brought up. As far as bringing to my attention this historical incident of the Second World War, which according to the film, you know, was taken from Winston Churchill's files, which were declassified in 2016. So they just came to light recently. I like that. I liked learning about this. I mean, but what Ritchie does to the material, this historical episode, I didn't like, you know, which was to turn it into a spy action comedy movie, which parenthetically was at best as a spy action comedy movie, kind of hit and miss. And hit and miss in the sense that despite the mantle of the film being an action thriller, for an action spy thriller, it's a bit on the lethargic side. So just looking at it from that standpoint, it's not entirely successful. So, God, what is this movie really in the end? It's a weird hybrid hodgepodge, which actually might have worked better if Ritchie hadn't toned down his characteristic manic, frenetic, out-of-breath directorial style, which at best can be breathtaking, but at worst exhausting. There's lots of Nazi slaughtering in this movie. You know, the way this troop of killer misanthropes just picks off these Nazis one by one in groups and in formations, it's all a bit unrealistic, but it's admittedly kind of satisfying. What am I saying? As a socket to the Nazis' video game-like drama, to a point, the movie works, but if you want the real story, I think you just need to check out the historical record of Operation Postmaster. I just kept going back and forth while I was watching it, and I'm kind of down the middle on it in terms of it being a good movie. It's an okay one, nothing more, nothing less. It's okay, but
so not a thumbs down, kind of a middle of the road.
Yeah, middle of the road. Yeah. All right. I like the actors. The actors were really good. The cast was excellent. So yeah, there's that.
Next one, I heard Michael Snyder say earlier, this is really bloody.
Yeah, what did Michael think of it? I missed that, but did he like it? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think he did, but he said that he warned there's lots of blood going on here.
Well, you know, yeah, okay. Well, Abigail's a horror film, although we really don't find that out. I mean, well, I guess you could tell it from the trailers, but we don't really find out until about 50 minutes into the movie. Initially, we're led to believe that this is going to be a drama about the kidnapping of a mob boss's young daughter. And this mob boss, we learn, will stop at nothing to get his revenge upon the kidnappers. So you're going, ooh, this is going to be a creepy, you know, mafia movie. And it's like, oh God, you know, and when they dispose of their victims, you don't even want to look. That's Anyway, then suddenly out of the blue, it turns into, the more I think about it, one of the stupidest vampire movies I've ever seen. Sorry, Michael. But anyway, it's a reimagining of the 1936 Universal monster film Dracula's Daughter. But this reimagining bears little resemblance to that movie. So, okay, I'll first say what's good about it. Some of it is witty. Some of it's funny. Some of the lines that the actors toss off are, you know, make you chuckle. There's some great, gruesome, and really gross special effects sequences, which fans of gore movies will love. The cast is good. But that's about it for me. When I see any movie, Kim, you know, I always try to stay open to what its intent is,
sure,
you know, where it wants to take me. Does it fulfill all it's promising to the viewer?
Right.
And I guess this movie delivers on those levels, but it's a mishmash of styles. And again, I'm talking as a critic here. For one, it tries to do and be too much, way too much, in my opinion. And for this movie in particular to really work, it's one of those that you can't really think a lot about. And maybe I'm just too much in my head when I watch these kinds of movies, but hey, bottom line reason I thought Abigail was stupid is that it kept shifting narrative gears needlessly, I think. I mean, that you eventually go like, well, what's the friggin' point of this? I mean, it just seemed to be this weird exercise that kept making you, you know, you were trying to guess, like, well, where is this going? What is this doing? Okay. And speaking of shifting its gears, as far as the script is concerned, it kept undermining itself, meaning it kept changing the rules of the vampire myth, the vampire legend, in midstream to suit its momentary intentions. I mean, that's the only reason I could think it was kept changing. And then when they throw in this thing about at the end of the movie, they try to get serious and poignant on you. They throw in this thing about parenting, a bad parenting, human and vampire. I just rolled my eyes. I'm trying not to say too much about the plot, but okay, I don't. Well, suffice it to say that despite all the blood and gore, I think gore fans won't be too disappointed if that's what they're going to go to see the movie for. Despite all the vampire effects, though, this is really, in my opinion, a stupid movie. And it's the script that needed a rewrite, maybe several rewrites. You know, at one point, Kim, during the film, and I never do this because it's really bad movie theater etiquette, but I'm going to say ahead, nobody saw me because I sat all alone in the last row of the theater with nobody even remotely near me. But I texted during the movie. I think it's the first time I have actually texted during a movie to a friend in L.A. while I was watching the movies. I said, you know, and I texted, I says, I'm watching this movie, Abigail, and it was really making me seriously concerned. Actually, the same could be said for the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, but that watching movies like Abigail is making me more seriously concerned than ever what passes for entertainment these days. Oh, so man. Anyway, enough about Abigail.
I've never heard you call a movie stupid before.
Well, this one was was stupid. I mean, this qualifies. Yeah. But I mean, if you're so inclined, I know horror fans are going to go, I like horror movies, too. I don't know if I would have seen this based on the thrill on the the trailer. I don't know if I would have gone. I generally like a good horror movie, but this one just kept making me roll my eyes. I'm going, come on. Anyway, I know.
No.
You know, maybe I'm overthinking it.
Well, skip it.
I just said, you know, yeah, I kept going. Yeah, I was so frustrated. I actually, so I could get back into the movie and pay, you know, the requisite attention to it, I actually text a good friend of mine in LA and I just said, I can't believe this. You know, I can't believe how stupid this movie is anyway.
Let's go to Ripley.
Ripley, yeah. Streaming on Netflix. Yeah, we hardly ever talk about, I know Michael talks a lot about TV. He gets, mm-hmm. I don't know how he sees all this TV with all the movies he's got to see. But anyway, this is an 8-part miniseries. It's now streaming on Netflix. It's based on Patricia Highsmith's novel, The Talented Mr. Ripley. Have you ever seen the movie, Kim, of The Talented Mr. Ripley?
With Matt Damon. Damon or Brad Pitt?
Matt Damon, Jude Law. You're thinking Brad Pitt, Jude Law. They're both similarly good looking. And Gwyneth Paltrow was in it, and Cate Blanchett was in it, too. Anyway, mm-hmm. great movie. You know, the Talented Mr. Ripley even is a novel. It's like the ultimate psychological thriller, I think, about a sociopath. And of all the Ripley movies that have been made, I think this is the best. It was written, conceived for TV, and directed by one of the great screenwriters. His name is Steve Zaillian. He wrote Schindler's List and The Irishman and Awakenings, the Robin Williams movie, Gangs of New York. He also wrote and directed one of my all-time favorite movies. It was called Searching for Bobby Fischer. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he really outdoes himself in Ripley. And it's so interesting because this movie made me think about the character again. and why I think he's such an interesting character, even though he's just this disreputable, horribly damaged, horrendous human being. He's such an interesting figure and one of the most compelling sociopaths in all of literary fiction. Interesting in that he murders without compunction. He can't always predict what the outcome of his killings will look like, but he somehow always manages to figure out what to do, be it with the body of the person he just killed, the surviving friends of the deceased, and always through, he has this sheer force of will and maybe panic and naked fear that he may be found out. But what's more interesting than that is that he is always the recipient of this incredible amount of cosmic luck. That's the only thing I could, way I can just say. Things like these universal forces, if you will, align in this weird way that grow out of his misdeeds. And these, I don't know if you want to call them, you know, twists of fate. Ultimately, they're always in his favor, despite the awfulness of his character. And I think one of the reasons we find this unsavory character so interesting is that while we want him to get caught, at the same time, we're weirdly rooting for him to escape. It's like, you know, Norman Bates in Psycho, only the difference here is that, you know, Tom Ripley is not only a sociopathic killer, but he's a person who just piles lies upon lies upon lies. And he pretends to be different people. And you're going, how the hell can this guy keep this straight? And, but anyway, he always, anyway, so I found that, anyway. There have been several film iterations of this character. We just, you know, we mentioned the talented Mr. Ripley, but this new version is just, it was, I kept going, wow, when I was watching it. It may be the best thing Netflix has ever done. Certainly it's in the top top five best of what they've produced to date. And it's just delicious. I mean, that's a weird adjective to describe this miniseries, but it's got this dark sense of humor. This version of Tom Ripley is not only darkly comic, but darkly ironic and just darkly dark. It's all in black and white too, which is really interesting. I think it was inspired to shoot it in black and white. It's beautifully photographed in a style that's reminiscent of the classic Hollywood black and white movies like of the 30s, 40s, and 50s, like Wuthering Heights and Citizen Kane and All About Eve, those kinds of films. And there's a lot of Italy location shooting, like in Palermo and Rome and Naples, just gorgeous on-location photography with Italian, you know, statue and statuesque iconography shot from these amazing angles. Anyway, it's just, you watch this and you just go, God, this is so beautiful. This horrible movie, this horrible story about this horribly sick sociopath is beautiful. And I should mention Andrew Scott, who's right there. He is really having what I would call a moment in movies. He is really superb here as the titular murderous, deeply disturbed, sociopathic Tom Ripley. Just watching what he does here with this character, the choices he makes as an actor, make you nervous and jittery and wanting you to look over your shoulder, you know, when you're watching the movie. It's just amazing. It's case study and brilliant acting for all aspiring actors. I recommend watching this series just to watch what this guy does. Just brilliant. Anyway, unsavory as it all is, just for its writing, its directing, its production design, its cinematography, its score and performances, I don't think you'll find anything better this year than Ripley. It's just superb. Wow. It's okay. Superb. Just 4 stars, 4 out of 4 stars.
Now I have to watch it. I mean, highly recommend that kind of, wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's creepy, but boy, is it beautifully done. Yeah, and it's one of those things where you can, it's like a Francis Bacon painting. Francis Bacon's paintings were just horrible to look at, very dark, ugly, but at the same time, there was a beauty about them, if that makes any sense. That's this Ripley series. Just, you can't look away, really. I actually streamed all 8 episodes and I did the first 4. Then I made some coffee. I think I had a sandwich. And then I thought, well, I'll watch the next one. I did it all in one sitting.
You
I couldn't
binged.
Believe it. I binged. I never binge. I think I don't have time to binge. But this binging is making me thinking, well, maybe I'm just not as into these things. You know, this was good. This was really, really
Eileen
good.
Eileen agrees. She says Ripley is gorgeous and I'm loving it.
Oh, and good, then, Eileen. Good taste, so Eileen.
John had a question, and you, I think, answered it at the beginning. Is this based on The Talented Mr. Ripley or another one of her novels?
Yeah, it's based on The Talented. Well, that, she's done several of the Ripley novels where Ripley's a character. But yeah, this, actually the first, I would say the first three, maybe four episodes closely resemble the plotting of The Talented Mr. Ripley movie, the one that we just talked about with Matt Damon. But the writing is slightly different. There's more here to chew on, actually. I thought, I mean, I loved the Matt Damon movie. I thought it was great, but this just, this was great. This was great filmmaking. Okay. Well, you know, don't watch it before you go to bed. Of course, you're a night owl, aren't you?
I am a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Maybe it'll go with your being a night owl. I wouldn't want to watch this before I went to bed. Let's put it that way.
We'll recap it. Hard Miles, well-made movie for teens. You liked it.
Yes.
The Ungentlemanly Warfare movie, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, you gave it a middle of the road. You said it's an action spy thriller. You called it a weird hybrid hodgepodge, and you kind of gave it a
meh.
Abigail, a horror movie. You called it a stupid vampire movie. You said you texted during the film and you gave it a thumbs down.
Yeah, God, I never thought I would admit that in public, but you know, I did. Sorry. Hopefully first and last time I will ever do that. But I did look around to make sure like nobody saw my like screen, you know, light up and
that
you know
weren't annoying
that I weren't annoying anyway.
And then you review for us a TV series which you love. You called it probably maybe one of the best things Netflix has ever put out, Ripley on Netflix, and you say this is worth it.
Yep, absolutely, and I stand by that comment too. So have you seen anything good since I last talked to you?
Nothing that I would go, oh, I must. What did I watch?
Did you watch The Greatest Hits?
I didn't watch The Greatest Hits. Musica, which you had recommended.
What did you think?
I thought it was weird.
It was weird.
Hadn't prepared me for it.
Yeah. Because
they never really explain what he has. He has this this affliction where he hears, what is it called? I forget.
Yeah, synesthesia, it's called.
Synesthesia. So you hear, you see music, right?
Right.
Right. And so in everything. And so the guy looks like he has a raging case of ADHD because he can't focus, can't pay attention.
Yeah.
Because in his mind, everything is music. And they never explain it. You kind of, you see it happening, but you don't understand that there's actually something
going on in his head. Yeah. I think he felt that showing it, maybe people could piece it together or something. I don't know.
If you hadn't explained it, I wouldn't have known what I was watching.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
So I was glad to have had your guidance on this one, because if I had just clicked on it, I would have been like, what is this?
But you did think it was weird. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it was a little weird. I liked it.
Yeah.
And I liked his character. He's kind of a lovable character. He's kind and feel bad when things don't go his way.
Right.
But
I liked his girlfriend. Yeah. The actress that played his girlfriend is his real life girlfriend. They're really a couple, those two.
Part two, in real life. Girlfriend number two?
Who was girlfriend number two?
I don't know. He has to dump the first one, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. It's girlfriend number two. I forgot. I see a lot of movies. I sometimes forget.
Was interesting. It was an interesting movie, and I'm glad I saw it. So.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Yeah. And always, you know, never. That's the problem. You see, when I'm real excited about a movie, it raises people's expectations, and I think they go in thinking, "Oh, this is going to be so great," and then they're looking at it from that perspective, and it's like, "Oh, it was okay, but I didn't think it was that great." So you have to be careful about, you know. I think the full enjoyment of a movie is about managing your expectations.
Sure.
So yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but I'm glad you watched it.
Yeah, I did.
You know, and you know, don't forget, you know, The Greatest Hits, I think, is the movie Made for You, Kim. You got to see right. that one. Okay.
That's the next one on the list. And, All right. And Ripley as well. That one too.
Yeah. Okay. All
Tim
right.
Sika, thank you for joining us. And thank you for your thoughtful reviews as always. And I get to see you next Friday. I'm loving this.
And me too, Kim. It's great fun talking to you. And thank you so much for having me. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye, Tim Sika.
Bye.
That's Tim Sika at the movies. So grateful to have him here on the After Party Live. I'm glad we could bring him over and make him part of this show. So very cool. Want to thank and give a big aloha to Wes and Meredith. Both during the show have kicked in to help support the After Party Live. So huge, huge thank you to both Wes and Meredith today. Let's go do some more stories because I think we have a bit more time. And Mark started a little late, so it kind of discombobulated us with everything. But I think we can get to a few more before we wrap it up for the weekend. So let's go back and talk about some of these things that we have, like the Tesla truck. How about this? So first we had the Tesla Cybertruck. Remember the stories where if it rained a little bit, even mist, and there were some droplets on the outside of the Tesla Cybertruck, that it would develop rust spots? Yeah, well, apparently that's not the only thing going on with the Tesla truck. Unfortunately, it has a new problem now. It's under recall, thousands of these Tesla trucks that have been sold, because the pedals can get stuck at full throttle. That sounds like a big problem. Yeah. So this truck is supposed to be apocalypse proof, right? It's supposed to be strong and tough. We had the orange rust marks, and now 3,880 Cybertrucks made between November and April are being recalled to replace the accelerator pedal assemblies. Why? Because when high force is applied, like when you're going fast and pushing down very far, the Cybertruck accelerator pedal, the gas pedal, but it's not, it's an electric vehicle, so it's not gas, right? So it's an accelerator pedal, can dislodge, the pad on top can dislodge and trap the pedal in the down position. So you can't let up on the acceleration. The defect increases the risk of crash. What happened? Soap. Soap is to blame for this. I'm telling you, this Tesla Cybertruck apocalypse proof whatnot is really brought down by the littlest things. A little bit of water, a little bit of soap. The National Highway Transportation Safety Administration says an unapproved change introduced lubricant soap to aid in the component assembly of the pad to the accelerator pedal was used. And the residual lubricant reduces the retention of the pad to the pedal. So the pad slips off the pedal, and when you push down all the way, the pad slips off and gets stuck. Too slippery. Yeah. How much is the Cybertruck? $61,000 to $100,000, depending on what you get on your Cybertruck. Cybertruck, this one man films the inside of his Cybertruck. He holds the accelerator pad in his hand and said he had it slip up from the pedal while he was driving, and when it got stuck, it blocked the whole pedal from going back up. He said it held the accelerator down 100%, full throttle. He said he was lucky. He had a clear mind. He didn't panic. Held the brake down, and that overrode the pedal situation. No injuries, collisions, or deaths due to this thus far. And so now we have the recall. Not a good showing. Not a good, you know, beta testing, I guess you could say. Maybe they should have beta tested the Tesla Cybertruck before they put it out there in the world. I'm seeing a lot of pictures. People, when they see one in the wild, they post it. So, yeah. Oh, poor Tesla Cybertruck. Man, did you see this crazy, crazy video? I wanted to show it to you because this poor woman, she goes on, you might not think she's poor, but she goes on a cruise because she's very pregnant. And, you know, some people do this. They go on the cruise and think maybe, well, it's the last trip before I have the baby. I need to relax a little bit before the birth, right? That's not what happened to her. She got sick while she was on the cruise and she had to be airlifted. Now, one would think this is a pretty big cruise ship, right? One would think that there's a helicopter landing spot, or there shouldn't they mandate that there has to be some type of helicopter spot on cruise ships? Didn't happen here. Not only does she have to be airlifted off the ship, watch how they do it. The rescue chopper comes in. They have a rescue swimmer go down. They load her into a basket. There she is on the gurney. And look at, they clip her into the string hanging for the cable, hanging from the bottom of the chopper, and they airlift her. There she is, this pregnant lady dangling over the sea in a basket. Can you even imagine? I mean, I am telling you, it's almost worse than being sick. You can talk about stress while you're pregnant. There you are. I mean, wow. So they take her in the basket and there she goes. I mean, wow. What a rescue effort. Glad they did it, but yikes. I wanted to quickly mention this because I thought it was interesting. This HIV medication may apparently reduce the risk of Alzheimer's disease. Things they find out. They did a new study. And people living with HIV who got standard meds to keep the virus at bay had apparently much lower rates of Alzheimer's. And researchers are thinking maybe the drugs lower the risk for Alzheimer's. They couldn't figure out any other reason. So this is all early stage research. But researchers are thinking that maybe these HIV drugs work at a genetic level to keep Alzheimer's at bay in the brain. The research done by a nonprofit research group called Sanford Burnham Prebys, it's in La Jolla in Southern California. So they looked at the rates of Alzheimer's among nearly 80,000 HIV positive people over the age of 60. More than 46,000 of them had been prescribed a form of HIV-suppressing meds known as reverse transcriptase inhibitors. Among the group, they realized that Alzheimer's diagnoses occurred in about 2.5 people per 1,000. That is much less than the 6.15 per 1,000 observed in a control group of older people without HIV. So 2.5 as opposed to 6.15. That's significant. You know, they're going to study this and find out more, but I thought it was worth mentioning. this diamond ring is actually really pretty. Somebody lost it on the beach. Digging in the sand. Yep. This wedding ring was lost on Galveston Island in Texas. And I guess this woman, her name is Daisy Maldonado. She was visiting with her family and she was digging in the sand, having a great time. Hours later, she realizes her ring set is missing from her finger. So she finds this treasure hunting club on Facebook, a bunch of metal detector people that go around and help you find your stuff. And they went to the beach and tried to search for the ring. But they realized then that it had already been found. This man and his girlfriend saw this fishing net that was partially buried in shallow water. And they pull it up and this ring goes flying out of the sand. And they grab it. And they saw people using metal detectors nearby. And they walked up with their discovery and said, hey, you know, look what we found. The metal detectors people say this was really lucky because that ring, it turns out, because she had been digging in the sand, was buried so deep that the metal detectors probably wouldn't have found it. So they put the People that found it in contact with the woman, they gave it back, and she now has her ring back. Lucky day. Absolutely. It wouldn't be an After Party Live without a lotto story of the day. Oh, no. And this is a good one. This lady, you know, going through her life, doing what you do. She decides she's going to make a run for pizza. Stops to get a pizza on the way home and thought, I'm into the Party Palace liquor next door to the pizza place. So I'm going to just grab a couple of these tickets, right? 41-year-old woman. She said, my husband is usually the one who buys the scratch-off tickets, but I decided to stop and buy one on my way to pick up the pizza. So she gets a large instant game, and then she goes on, gets her pizza. She said, while I was waiting for the pizza, I sat in my car and I scratched off the ticket. And she said, it was surreal when I realized I won $2 million. She said, I called my husband to tell him the big news. I was so excited. Couldn't wait till I got home. How's she going to use the money? She's going to pay her bills? Going to take a big vacation? Everything is good. This is not so good. Sometimes, can you just leave something that's fine and doesn't need to be fixed alone? I mean, I'm all for innovation and being creative, but do we really need this? The cup of noodles has a new flavor of ramen. It's the everything bagel flavor with cream cheese flavored noodles floating in the sauce. No thanks. Noodles flavored like an everything bagel swimming around in cream cheese is how it's described. Yeah, no. The company that makes cup of noodles, Nissin Foods, say this product offers an unmatched bagel experience in the form of a savory tasting instant ramen seasoned with sesame seeds, poppy seeds, garlic, dried onion, and caraway seeds. I don't know. We know noodle fans and foodies are constantly finding ways to elevate their instant ramen with different sauces, seasonings, and unexpected ingredients. So we took inspiration from our consumer base to give everyone's favorite noodles a creamy twist. Do you want your cup of soup creamy? I don't think you want it creamy. No. No, thank you. It's not the first time that Cup of Noodles has decided that they're going to tweak flavors. They released a limited time pumpkin spiced ramen once. No, thank you. They had a breakfast ramen with flavors of sausage, egg, pancakes, and maple syrup. I'm going to turn that one down too. The Cup of Noodles Everything Bagel with Cream Cheese is available exclusively at select Walmart. And if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know, then I don't know what does. No, thank you. There's a bunch of ballerinas that broke a record. They stayed on their toes to break this world record. They did it in New York. And I want to show it to you. They did it in New York and they broke the Guinness Book of World Records. So let me take away the disgusting cup of noodles that no one wants. I don't know. Do you want to try it? I don't want to try it. And let's watch, because I think you need to see the video on this one. Here it is. Look at these beautiful ballerinas. Here they go. I'm going to turn the music off.
53 ballerinas set the Guinness World Record for the most dancers on point at the same time for one full minute. The Youth America Grand Prix set this record. The previous one was set by 306 dancers in 2019. That's tough to do.
Yeah, it's very cool. So, new record for on point ballerinas. I love it. Some other stories that I wanted to share with you. Oopsies. Yeah. Sorry. Some other stories that I wanted to share with you include the update on this lemur. Remember the lemur in Texas? We talked about it a couple of days ago and they couldn't catch it. These guys, there were two of them. They haven't found one. They think maybe something bad happened to one, but they did catch this guy. Look at him kind of chilling there in the shelter. They found him. This Good Samaritan captured this lemur. It had been several weeks this lemur was on its own. It's one of these situations where someone has an exotic pet. The person, the owner of the lemurs, left them with a pet sitter and they escaped, right? And so these lemurs had been roaming for weeks. Now one of them caught, trapped by a local person, and the lemur's name is Julian, and Julian is now headed to the Ringtail Ranch Lemur Rescue in Lubbock, Texas. Apparently lemurs are so popular in Texas, they need their own rescue area. Crazy. Yeah. I wanted to get to some celebrity news too. I don't know if you saw this, and I'm going to play the music because at this point, I don't know if you guys noticed, but the show is already demonetized because we're switching over accounts and everything. And so, you know, we don't have the YouTube super stickers or super chats or make any money from the advertising stream at all. But that also means that I'm able to play this for you because I don't know if you saw the story. The sons of John Lennon and Paul McCartney have teamed up for this new song. So James McCartney and Sean Ono Lennon recently released the single Primrose Hill. I have a picture of them. Here they are together. It's, you know, you look at them and it's uncanny how much they look like their dads, right? And here's the song. A little snippet of the song anyway, Primrose Hill. Oh, sorry. I have the volume turned down. There you go. Check it out. Primrose Hill, Primrose Hill. That's it.
Always remember Primrose Hill, Primrose Hill.
I mean, it doesn't sound like a bad song, and their voices are beautiful together, and I love seeing them. It's almost like Lennon McCartney part two, right? Pretty cool. Hugh Grant has a bit of a conundrum, and then I promise I'll let you guys go. I'm sorry, we just started late with Mark Thompson, and now I feel like I'm playing catch up here, but I had so much to tell you. I have so much to say. Hugh Grant having some trouble. He's having a bit of a conundrum. So he sued the Sun's publisher, and this was a pretty big case. I don't know if you remember it. The case was about the spying that the Sun was doing, allegedly, right? Because they haven't admitted any wrongdoing here. But we're talking pretty rotten. This is for doing things like bugging his car, right? Like really invasive things that are just yucky. He said if every allegation was proven in court, he would still be liable for something approaching 10 million or 10 million pounds in costs. So even if everything was proven, he was offered money to keep this out of court. And he couldn't afford to go to court, which is, it sucks because the claims of landline tapping and burglary, this confidential information, the things he's accusing them of doing, I mean, you want them to pay the price for this, right? So here's what he said. He said that the company claims it's entirely innocent of the things I accused the Sun of doing. Phone hacking, unlawful information gathering, landline tapping, the burglary of his flat and office, the bugging of his car, the illegal blagging, they call it, of medical records, lies, perjury, destruction of evidence. He said, as is common with entirely innocent people, they are offering me an enormous sum of money to keep this matter out of court. Sarcasm. He said, I don't want to accept this money or settle. I would love to see all the allegations that they deny tested in court. But here's the kicker. He said, the rules around civil litigation mean that if I proceed to trial and the court awards me damages that are even a penny less than the settlement offer, right? So they offer him this enormous settlement. And he knows that if he goes to court and what he wins is less than what the settlement would have been, then he has to pay the legal costs of both sides. So that means he's on the hook for $10 million. And he said, I can't take that chance. He said, even if every allegation is proven in court, I would still be liable for something approaching 10 million pounds. And he said, I'm shying at that fence. And I completely understand. But what does the rule do? The rule then, because I mean, I guess they want to encourage people to settle. But then there's never really justice. And all you have to do is throw money at this and you can keep bugging cars and burglarizing flats to get this information on these celebrities. Crazy. And not right. Absolutely not right. I mean, they're never going to be held to account. And then there's this problem with the paparazzi going overboard. They need to be held to account. Man, get off my soapbox on that one. Yesterday, we talked about the possibility of the Sesame Street writers going on strike. But did you know that the Disney cast members have voted to unionize? The characters, cast members, filing a vote to unionize. These are the people that are on the parade floats at Disneyland and Disney World. The cast members that you pose with for pictures. So, 1,700 employees, a majority, voting to have the National Labor Relations Board represent them. They're looking for better wages, better benefits, better scheduling and working conditions in the Disney Magic Kingdom. Disney says, we support the cast members' right to a confidential vote that recognizes their individual choices. And they file for this vote to unionize, so it looks like they're headed that way. Yeah. There's another one. And as a matter of fact, this came up recently in my house. We're talking about using your brain so that you're exercising it, less likely to develop some type of dementia, right? They say if you do crossword puzzles, if you're a problem solver, if you're constantly thinking, exercising your brain, that somehow keeps your brain active and, you know, not atrophying or whatever it may be. That's not the scientific, but here is the scientific. Repetitive jobs, apparently no bueno. Routine jobs, according to the study, raise the risk of cognitive decline by 66% and dementia by 37%. So working your brain hard at your job could pay off in more ways than just bettering your career. It could protect your cognition and help prevent dementia. This is a study that was done by the Oslo University Hospital in Norway. They say the workplace is very important in promoting cognitive health. So if you have a routine job with very little mental stimulation during your 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, apparently it's linked to a 66% risk of mild cognitive impairment and a 37% greater risk of dementia after the age of 70, compared with having a job with high cognitive and interpersonal demands. Years spent in school didn't help counter the impact of a repetitive job, or did help, but not enough. So if you went to college, apparently it reduces the impact of a repetitive job by about 60%, but doesn't fully negate your risk. What do they say? Stay actively engaged in life. Maintain a sense of purpose. Learn new things. Stay socially active. Those are powerful tools to prevent against cognitive decline. The study also showed being cognitively engaged at work has profound benefits in the fight against dementia. So just like exercising your physical muscles, you have to exercise the old brain muscle, right? And that's really it. So this is another benefit of the Mark Thompson Show, the Nikki Medoro Show, and the After Party Live. Kind of think about things, talk about things, develop an opinion about things, exercise the old brain. Not that it's, you know, not that we're solving the world's problems over here, but at least we're thinking a little bit, aren't we? We're having interpersonal skills here in the chat. I think we're doing it right. So that's what we're having. All right. So before I let you go, I just want to thank you so much for being here and for hanging in, even though the show is a little off kilter time-wise today. Thanks for being here for Tim Sika's movie reviews and for all the wonderful contributions to this show today. And again, I'll thank Wes and Meredith for that. And I will see you on Monday. I hope you have a great weekend. Make it a really good one. On Monday, you'll find us on the Nikki Maduro Show at 10 a.m. for a bite-sized Nikki Maduro Show nugget, followed by the Mark Thompson Show at 11. And hopefully, we'll be back to a little more on schedule here on the After Party Live. So, again, please click like on your way out. If you haven't subscribed, please click the subscribe button as well. And again, have a great weekend. I'll see you guys on Monday. Bye-bye.
The After Party Live would like to thank the following contributors and viewers like you.